Sorry, a few lines before the end. We are, let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines up from the bottom. We'll go from the Tana Rabbanan. We spoke about borrowing someone else's beged. We spoke about faking it, showing up with a beged that's already torn. Okay, here we go. Let's go from Tana Rabbanan. Chola shemeis lo meis, ein modian oso shemeis. If you have someone who is very sick, we're not talking about someone who has a cold. We're talking about someone who has a significant illness, something where if we disturb their equilibrium, we may be compromising their safety. Okay, and that person unfortunately suffers a loss. A relative of theirs dies. Okay, when that happens, we do not inform the chola about the death. Shemiti tarif died to a love, because we don't want to cause any mental anguish that could cause a downward spiral. God forbid that could seriously impact the person's health. We find a lot of halachos that Chazal instituted along these lines. Maybe the one that gets the most attention in Shas is what's called the matnas shchiv meira. Shchimera is someone who is on their deathbed and hanging in the balance. And even though normally transactions in halacha require formalized kinyanim, actions, documentation, and so forth, the one thing that one scenario where a person can transfer ownership of property simply by verbalizing it is when they are in that situation of shchimera. Shemiti tarv daito, if he says on his deathbed, I want this relative to receive this portion of the inheritance, we make it effective immediately just because he said so, because we're afraid if we now, you know, we're going to have to call on the lawyers and call on the beis din, we're going to have to get him to sign something, that's going to get him a little bit, confused and upset and could cause a downturn in his condition. Okay, so likewise, if we just don't want to make it any worse. But you're saying he's confused, so and therefore
how
we...
How do you know that what he says is real?
100%. 100%. If we have reason to believe that he doesn't have the wits about him, that's true whether he's on his deathbed or if he's, he's 35 years old and he's healthy. But if he's drunk, right, if we assess based on the scenario that he's not in charge of his mental faculties...
But being close to death itself is usually with a mental state which is not necessarily the best for a transaction.
We're not talking about where the person is like half unconscious. We're talking about a person who, God forbid, is suffering, and they know this is near the end, but they recognize all the people around them. You know, if there were indications that they're not fully aware of the reality, so that would be a different story. Okay? So here we don't want to attempt to... reduce his ability to remain at equilibrium. So therefore, we won't inform them. Okay. And furthermore, the Gemara continues, ein makaron b'fanav. We don't tear kriya in front of the person. Meaning that could mean a couple of things. It could mean that the other people in the room shouldn't, even if you don't actually tell him explicitly, don't do anything that he may pick up on what's going on or be disturbed. You'll see some change the gear, so it says in makaron b'fanav. There's a little dalid there, at least in my edition. Some change that to the words v'ein makaron lo. We do not perform kriya for him. Meaning, even if he were to find out, okay, whether you told him, you didn't tell him, but now he knows, he's exempt from kriya because doing something so dramatic could also disturb him, could throw him off of his equilibrium, even if the news itself did not. And if there are women, or we mentioned women because it was customary for women to, they were more vocal about their, they were sometimes hired to sing songs and express vocally the sorrow. So we make sure that the person has complete quiet and nothing to disturb them. Okay. All right. Yeah. Mekonenos. I just know the Hebrew word. Okay. That's a new word for me. Okay. So there's a lot of very practical nafkaminas. Very practical nafkaminas. I wanted to sidetrack just for a moment. Because some rishonim say that this gemara should be taken at face value. It's only a chola. The only time you don't inform the person that they suffered a loss is if the person's sick. That would imply that there's an obligation in every other scenario to tell the person as soon as they know. You want the person to say Kaddish, you want them to observe Avelis. The majority of the Rishonim read this Gemara differently. And this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. It's not only talking about Chola. Chola is one example, it's a more extreme example, but there's never an obligation to tell the potential mourner that they suffered a loss. Not only that, Shulchan Aruch even has a more emphatic Lashon that it's considered foolish. You never want to be the person to inform the Avel, even if they will ultimately be informed. But I'll read it to you from the Shulchan Aruch. Misha meislo meis v'lo nodala. Someone suffers a loss and they're not aware of it. Eino chova shiyom renalo. There is no chiv to tell that person. V'afilu ba'avivimo, even if it's their parents. V'alzen nemar motzi diba huksil. And about someone who goes ahead and tells them anyway, it's a pasuk in Mishlei. Someone who gives bad news is a foolish person. Okay. So hold on. Mutzal azminu l'sudas erusin nesuin. This sounds unbelievable. You can even invite the person to a wedding. V'chol simcha kevin she'ini yodea. As long as the person doesn't know. Miu im shoel olav enal l'shaker. If they ask you, if you're the doctor, okay, and they say, you know, what's going on? Is he alive? You're not allowed to lie. V'lomar chayhu and say yes, the person's alive. Shenemar midvar sheker terchak. There's another pasuk. It says you're not supposed to lie. Okay. So the Rama adds that despite the fact that there's no obligation to inform the Avel, the minig is to go ahead and tell the boys, the sons, so that they can say Kaddish, but not necessarily to tell the daughters. So this is mind-blowing, right? What does this mean exactly? So as an aside, this is definitely one of the places where the poskim discuss, it seems to be, that, you know, the minhag was only for men to say Kaddish, not for women to say Kaddish. But that's a side point. That's debatable over here. But just to try to illustrate, what are we talking about over here? In terms of the lundas, because you're asking the lundas, forget about how we rationalize this. Okay, this is something that it'll take a minute for us to wrap our heads around. The lundas is as follows. We discussed a few examples of this, I think, a couple weeks ago. Orla, the first couple years of the tree's growth. You're not allowed to eat from the fruit, right? What I say? Okay. First three years. Okay. During the first 3 years, from the time it's planted, you're not allowed to eat the fruits of the tree. In Eretz Yisrael, you'll see on the packages, it's, you know, any hechsher says there's no problem of truma, no problem of meiser, no problem of orla, because in Eretz Yisrael, that's real. How come it doesn't say that on your OU package that you buy in the supermarket? So the answer is, because in Chutz La'aretz, there's a special halacha Moshe Mishinai, that if you don't know about it, the don't ask, don't tell policy. If you don't know about it, it's not usher. The iser, usually we imagine the isurim are in the abstract. They exist a priori. If it's the first 3 years of the tree, then objectively there's a prohibition. I can't eat it. It's treif. Orla in Chutz La'aretz is different. It's an example of something where it's not that it's usher and I don't know about it. Rather, my lack of knowledge means that the prohibition hasn't set in. Okay, which means that it could be usher for you to eat and mutter for me to eat, and you don't have to even tell me. You don't even have to tell me. So sometimes it's the another example of this is a mamzer. If you're aware of it, you're not allowed to act it, you're not allowed to eat it, but you don't necessarily have an obligation to go around and tell everybody else. Same thing is true about a mamzer. The Gemara darshins this in the fourth parak of Kedushin. Mamzer vadai osur rachmana v'lo mamzer safek. Only when there's concrete knowledge that the individual is a mamzer is it prohibited to go ahead and, you know, marry the person, have a relationship. As long as some doubt exists, then for that person who's acting on that doubt, it's permissible. Normally we say just the opposite. We say suffik d'oraisa l'chumra. There's a handful of isurim where it's not that it's usur and as a safeguard will prohibit suffik, but rather as long as it is only in the realm of suffik, the prohibition never sets in. Okay, those are the exceptions for sure. So this might be an exception as well. Avelis is something that only it only devolves upon the person when they're aware of that. As long as some lack of knowledge exists, I mean, there's different. I know of some practical situations where this has come up. This is not exactly the same thing, but Rabbi Mordechai Willig and Rabbi David Willig, their father passed away on Shabbos, and it was the offeruf of Rabbi David Willig's son. And they came back from the hospital, and they didn't tell anybody. So they have a sister. They have a sister who probably was not at the hospital. So there's no obligation to tell that person and ruin the simcha of the wedding, ruin everyone. Now again, most of the avelim in that case were informed already, but they didn't want to tell the actual chasam, right? What, what are you going to do about it on Shabbos anyway? Right? I know of Shur Rabbanim who have been in tricky situations where for some reason they received a phone call from the hospital. For whatever reason, maybe they were listed as some sort of proxy or some sort of, you know, consultant for the family. They got a call. They heard the message on the machine. So-and-so died. And they did not tell the child to after Shabbos because there's literally nothing for the child to do. All you're going to do is ruin his Shabbos, right? And worse, there are some, you know, you could do worse than that, you know, and there's really nothing for the person to do. So those are examples that come up occasionally.
Funny you mentioned this because my mother was telling me that she was extremely upset that when she was like 12 years old and her older sister passed away, and her family refused to tell her. They didn't need to hear from her. She said they were to give her aunts farewell.
So,
and she resented them for a long time because of that.
So I was going to read to you here. I believe it appears. This is the Bar Yashulchan. The Bar Yashulchan is a contemporary work. The author just passed away about a month or two ago. 2 months ago, maybe. Rabbi Feivel Cohen, who was a Rav in Brooklyn. Encyclopedic Words. He basically wrote, you can see from the style of the page, it's like a Mishnah Brura on the laws of Yoredeya. The Mishnah Brura wrote on Orach Chaim, the day-to-day halachos, and there's a whole section of Shulchan Aruch, 25% of Shulchan Aruch, that never had that, we'll say, redo, you know, in the 20th century, 21st century, and he did a phenomenal service for all of us. So he writes, Miu Nira, this is his own, you know, no one before 2007 or whenever he wrote this, put this in print, Nira Debe Mikrashem Lo Yomar Lo, in a situation where if you don't tell the individual, Shuv Yisvadamis, and they're going to find out about it afterwards. Yesh L'Shar She'elo Taromas, you think he's going to have tainas? He's going to be upset at you. Shalom Lo, you didn't inform him. Yesh L'Hagilo Degadol HaShalom. Then, for the sake of Shalom, more important than, you know, save the machlokas later, and you should tell him. Okay, so obviously, at the end of the day, it comes down to common sense. Any situation I can tell you where this is exercised practically is, here's another interesting twist on this. Miu b'mikro sh'acher miyodim shemes. If it's a situation where other people know that the relative died, right? Aval einam yodim shekarav zeh lo yada shemes, but they're not aware that the relative didn't get the message. Then, ein lazmin l'suda k'sha'osam acherim yirusham. Don't invite him to the family wedding or the family, because yashadu she'ino noga velos. Everyone's going to look around and say, oh, look at this guy. He's an aval and he went to the wedding.
I was going to ask you. He said if he doesn't know, you could invite him to a simcha. But if you invite him to a simcha, that's worse because people are going to come
exactly,
and say,
right. So if everyone else knows and he's the only one who didn't get the memo, yeah, okay.
Right, so this sounds like something in 2007 you would possibly in that rapist of communication.
That's a good point. Unfortunately, I know of situations where people found out about the loss of a relative from other people who got the email from some other organization that sent it out before the family was informed. Yeah. So, but I think the point is still. I'm happy you brought that up. It just goes to show you that we're still, even in 2023, we're too overexposed in information. People are too quick to share the information that sometimes you'll end up hearing from the wrong place. And that's also not a healthy thing.
Right, but it changes the nature of how you
relate
these things.
Right, 100%. But at least we can you know, practically see that the message over here in Chazal is that sometimes you get a juicy piece of information and you just want to share it. And sometimes even telling the person that it relates to specifically, forgive me, you know, just to lighten the mood a little bit, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld told a story about when he was, you know, a younger rabbi, and he got a call 3 o'clock in the morning. Mrs. Goldberg, you know, Rabbi, I need your help. Okay, what can I do for you? Just got a call from Eretz Yisrael. My mother-in-law passed away. I'm so sorry, Mrs. Goldberg. What can I do for you? They're making arrangements. Yeah, we're trying to. I'm not sure. My husband should go there and stay there for the shiva, or maybe he should go spend a few days and come back and sit shiva here in Queens. So they're talking about the pros and cons. Then Rabbi Schoenfeld stopped the woman and said, "Well, what does your husband think about all this?" My husband, he's fast asleep. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, Rabbi, don't you know? So, you know, sometimes we're so like, you know, just got to slow down. Just got to slow down. And I think that message still pertains. Okay, one more practical point over here, although, you know, we can give a whole shiur on this. It's a fascinating topic. This sefer is the Nishmas Avram, instant classic. This is written by Dr. Abraham S. Abraham, who's still alive. He's an elderly fellow now. But he was the head of Shaar Tzedek Hospital for many, many years, and he was very close with Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who he worked closely with developing the policies in the hospital, because Reb Shlomo Zalman was a posik for the hospital. So he discusses a few very relevant scenarios try to share one or two. Amar li Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, shebebeis cholim tzrichim l'adil l'mishpacha p'tir tzacholik deshilchol tapel b'kvaraso v'in kol iso b'davar. This, I think, is most important. You know why you have to tell? Perhaps our Gemara is true in theory where, I'll give an easy situation. You're on the other side of Europe, right? So, great. They'll send the telegram. They'll tell you right away. Again, there's nothing you can do about it right now. So there's no rush to tell the person. Nowadays, there's a chiyuv kfura, and wherever you are, you know, you'll fly in, you'll drive in. You can't, even if maybe there's no chiyuv on me for avelus until I'm aware of the information, but in the absence of the child's information, the poor nifter is a meis mitzvah, right? Who's going to take care of the kid, right? So maybe in chiyuv avelus, I'm not obligated until I know about it, but the kvura maybe is a little bit different. And then he quotes from Reb Neubert. Reb Neubert was a student of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Sheben lo yagi lahorub mishum kibarava aim shemitzarim. Even though ultimately the relative need to know, a child should not be the one to inform a parent. Get someone else to do it, because you're going to be causing your parents pain. And even if they need to know about it for practical purposes, okay, so find someone else to do so. But you know, a child's not supposed to even do an operation or a procedure on a parent. Again, provided that there's other people who could do a good job, but the parent says, no, I trust you. You know, you're going to do a good job for the procedure. We're talking about if the child's a doctor, obviously. But if it's not necessary to cause the pain, it shouldn't cause the pain. One last point here. Ma'od mod tzrichim lizar b'tzura b'nusach b'hamodiyam l'kar v'apetir z'ben mishpachto. Regardless, you know, even if you do have to tell them, it's very important how you tell them. Ki yesh v'zeh yachol ligrom l'halom v'afilu l'misas b'ben mishpacha. He says, we find the Tanakh a number of examples where someone told a relative and they didn't say it quite in the same way, and the person who received the information actually died from the news. Eli HaKohen. Eli HaKohen was told about his children. They died in war. He fell off the chair and he died. He was an elderly man. On the flip side, we have Yaakov Avinu is told that Yosef's alive, and they still had to break them very gently. They had his granddaughter Sarah play a song and break them very slowly. Okay, there's other examples in Tanakh like that. Sarah finds out that Yitzchak, Akedah Yitzchak, also there, it was good news, he was alive. But if you don't know how to say it, it could have consequences. The meis chol v'ein b'nei mishpacha al yado, if the person dies and the relatives are not nearby, ein lo dila mit telephone. Don't tell them over the phone, true nifter. El tzrichem lukro lehem lebeis acholim, eikem matzavo, v'rak hashem b'beis chom, you should tell them it's important for you to come because of your parent's situation. Then when they show up, you tell them gently. And on Shabbos, there's no heter to call them on the phone, even with a guy. You know that they're going to show up after Shabbos, so wait for them there and make sure you inform them gently before they enter the room. Okay, so all this has to be done with common sense. We're playing with very, very...
Can we go back to the situation with a mamzer? In that case, there are repercussions. What happens if a person does get married and finds out later?
Okay.
Okay. What is right. The situation?
So there's stories, there's apocryphal and non-apocryphal stories about how a guy comes to the chuppah and he says, Rabbi, you know, my mother told me before she died to hand this envelope to the rabbi under the chuppah, you know, before I got married. I don't know what it says, but he took, right? And Rabbi Masada Gushon opens up and says, my son is a mamzer, right? So now what do you do? So in rabbi school, you faint. Okay. Let someone else deal with it. I'm just joking. But so there's some stories that go like that. But let's say there's only one person who knows. The only person who knows is the rabbi. So maybe it's not the rabbi's job to inform.
What's wrong with that situation? It doesn't know. The person gets married, and a year later,
they find out later. Yeah.
So is there a repercussion at that point?
So what you're
once they're married, it doesn't matter. But it does.
I think it does. Yeah. The question is, right? If we presume that the person is going to find out, okay, so that needs to be dealt with differently. Understood. Right. I'm just saying, on the lundish level, you know, just understand the mechanics of the din begins when there's that awareness. Okay.
Well, now also, it's possible it could be a suffix. If it's not a 100% known thing, then you can rely on...
Right. The most relevant situation is when it's a suffix. Okay, meaning I was giving the extreme situation where the person has no knowledge of it, but even if we have knowledge that the Rabbanim discuss all the you know, the details of the question, and they can't determine one way or the other if it's mutter, it's still a whopper of a chiddush to say that suffik d'oraisa l'chumra doesn't apply in that case.
That's true. Right. I'm just looking at the you know, they uncovered archival records, which happens these days,
right? But sometimes just because you find something written on paper from 100 years ago, that doesn't mean it always has halachic validity, right? So, you know, just because the information is out there isn't necessarily going to cause a problem. I'll throw one more piece of lumdus. This is actually the heart of one of the biggest machlokes in all of Shas, amongst the Rishonim, which is the following question. This is great food for thought. I hope you'll be able to sleep tonight after I throw this out to you. Safek d'orais l'chumra. Okay, we're all familiar with that. You know, every other page in Shas, safek d'orais l'chumra. Is that obligation to be strict in a situation of doubt, when it's a Torah prohibition, is that a Torah prohibition? Or is it only midrabanan that we are obligated to be strict in a situation of doubt? That has huge ramifications, because if, you know, let's talk about cheeseburger, okay? Cheeseburger, my favorite is Rabban in the whole world is a chicken cheeseburger, okay? Chicken cheeseburger, okay? It's only us from the Rabbanan, okay? So if it's a suffix, if the cheese is milchik or it's fleishik, it's mutter to eat the chicken cheeseburger, okay? But if it's a real, you know, another Whopper, okay? If it's from McDonald's, it's probably a d'oraisa, okay? So it's real beef, okay? Well, I don't know if it's real beef, if it's from McDonald's, but let's say it's real beef, okay? Safek d'oraisa l'chumra. I'm not sure. Safek d'oraisa l'chumra. So is it that the Torah tells me you got to be careful? If Hashem says don't eat it, be careful and exercise additional caution? Or no, Hashem says you want to play Russian roulette, you're allowed to. You may get burned. If it ends up being an isser, then you're going to be liable for it. But from the Torah's perspective, if you want to take a chance and roll the dice, you may do so. Chazal came along. That's the other side of the machlok. Chazal were the ones who came along and imposed this stringency to avoid doubt and not take any chances. So some bring a raya from this question of Safek Mamzer is Mutter. There's a halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai that Safek Mamzer is Mutter. The fact that Chazal had to receive a tradition from Har Sinai that a Safek Mamzer is Mutter, that implies that the normal situation of Safek is actually D'oraisa. And you have to exercise caution on a Torah level, okay? That's the big riot in the sugya. Again, there's ways to deflect it. This is the subject of the Shev Shmaitza, machlokes between the Rambam and the Ran. Big sugyas over here, but it revolves around this question. Okay, all right, let's continue. All right, umekaron lekatan. Second word on the line, about seven lines up from the bottom. Umekaron lekatan mitnei agvas nefesh. We tear kriya for a katan. Mitnei agmas nefesh. Up until now, we've been talking about kriya that is required, you know, by normal avel. Now we're talking about someone who's under bar mitzvah. We tear kriya for that child. If God forbid they lose a parent, it's limited to parents, not other siblings. Could be if there's a sibling who raised the child because they were orphaned. That would be a different situation. But mitnei agmas nefesh. Agmas nefesh means anguish. So the explanation of this more is that it's a kid. A kid isn't obligated to do mitzvahs the way an adult is. But we tear kriya for them because that helps, you know, everyone else in the environment feel the power of a loss. If you see Nebuch, this kid comes to shul, you know, you see him in the shiva house and his clothing are torn. So, you know, you have rachmanis. You appreciate the gravity of the situation.
We tear kriya for him on his...
on his baguette.
Or an hour.
No, on his baguette. Good. I'm sorry. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay. For that matter, because this isn't, quote unquote, the real thing. It doesn't have to be a full tefach. It's just more symbolic, you know, action. And the Ritz Gaya's comments over here that it does apply to all children, meaning even if they're under the age of chinuch. Normally, the age of chinuch is 5, 6, 7 years old. The mission in sukkah. What's that?
Even an infant.
I'm an infant, I guess. But a young child. Let's say he's 3 years old. I mean, normally the mitzvah of chinuch applies once the child is able to perform the mitzvah and understand what they're doing. The Gemara says. The Brisa says that a father should buy a lulav for his child once he's able to shake it. I never really knew what that meant because every kid can shake a lulav. But one of my sons, when he was, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old, the lulav was taller than he was. And every time he would pick it up, it would start tipping over. You know, so he's obviously not obligated in chinuch at that point. The Gemara says, tefillin. We don't start wearing tefillin until 12 and a half. You know, sometimes 30 days before, the Yekis don't actually put on tefillin until it's bo bayom, until the bar mitzvah itself, because in order to, you know, wearing tefillin, we wear it for a minimized shear the whole day. It used to be they wore it all day. But for the guf naki, because it requires an extra standard of cleanliness, we really, condense it. So even the chinuch period is condensed to 30 days. So here too, however old the child is going to be, 5, 6, 7, until they can understand what they're doing, right? Once they reach that age, then they're chayav to do kriya for real, like any other mitzvah of chinuch. The whole sugya is talking about the child who's 3, 4, 5 years old before the age of chinuch, when there's nothing that they need to do, and we'll tear kriya for them. Okay? But in the spirit of what we saw last week, that kriya and avelos are really two distinct realms of halacha. When it comes to a child above the age of chinuch, they may still not have the full obligation of chinuch in avelos. So they may have an obligation to tear kriya at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, but avelos doesn't really apply to them. They may do bits and pieces, but you'll find a theme throughout Shas, or Moshe Feinstein points this out. We don't, either the Acharim say it's because we don't, think about it like this. The idea of chinuch is to get you in the habit of things you're going to have to do. Hopefully, avelos is not going to be something that you frequently have to encounter, right? And it's also not something we want anyone to have to encounter. So anything that would be in that realm, there aren't too many things like that, but avelos would be one situation where perhaps Chazal didn't mandate avelos chinuch altogether because, we're not looking forward to it. Kaddish, technically they can say at any age. At any age they can say Kaddish.
As long as they can say.
4-year-old.
Yeah. So there is a question of the
child like this in shul saying Kaddish.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So that's the reason why we say Kaddish, a special Kaddish Yosam after Alina. That Kaddish was originally instituted and reserved for children because they couldn't be a chazan, they're too young. So we had one Kaddish a day that was specifically for that purpose, for the kids, which give the impression, unfortunately, think about the Crusades. People didn't have parents. Kids lost their parents. It was I'm just giving an example. Unfortunately,
I doubt a little child will understand what the Kaddish is about and what it means and so on.
Halavai, the adults know what the Kaddish is about. Right. We need to educate. We need to educate the children. We need to educate the parents also. So Avelis, by and large, does not apply to children, even though Kriya does. And the Nafkaminas are not going to go into it right now, but even the 9 days in Tisha B'Av, that's another example where the chinuch wasn't fully mandated because it's not really something we want to mandate, unlike lulav and things like that, which are pretty routine. Okay, if we have time, we'll come back to that, but let's cover some more ground. Korin al chamev al chamoso, mevnei kavod ishto. So here we find an obligation to tear kriya for a father-in-law or for a mother-in-law, but we qualify it by saying that's not a real type of kriya because it's not actually a relative, but out of respect for a spouse, you want to be on the same page. If your wife is not, if your wife is suffering, then you should be suffering also. We said that it used to be the common practice was to sit shiva mamish. As long as you were with your spouse, then you would sit shiva, you would do all the normal practice of an avel out of respect for the relative. Nowadays, we don't practice that because we assume that whoever the relative is, let's say it's a spouse is mochel on the husband from observing the shiva because that's would be an unreasonable expectation. But in the times of the Gemara, that was normal.
Which side do you tear on?
Good question.
Do you still tear Kriya?
Not that I'm aware of. The question: which side do you tear? Normally, we tear on the left for a parent and the right for other relatives. So if it's indirectly
with the wife.
Right, so you can say if you really want to be on the same page, so you should do on the same side as your wife is.
It's disrespectful to your own parents.
Perhaps. I'm not sure. Lamaisa, your yotze, either side b'diavad. Once you do a b'diavad, your yotze the kriya. So I'm not sure. It's a good question.
It's implying that it's only the husband will do it. A deference to the wife.
Right. Is your wife? Excellent question. So I would venture to say, I love that question, right? Why did the Gemara go out of its way to specify the husband as opposed to the wife? It could have used a gender non-specific, terminology. So perhaps it's because, we saw this last week, right? That there's certain kulas in Kriya Mipnei Kavod Isha, right? Because of tznias, so we don't go overboard. As soon as a woman tears kriya, she's allowed to change her shirt and not replace it, and do kriya again. Right, so it could be that this, which was a chumrah to begin with, right, doesn't have the same, force. It was never accepted, even mipnei kavod baila, that she should have to tear kriya. Another implication of this Gemara is that the mitzvah of Kibbutz Ava'im doesn't apply to a son-in-law, daughter-in-law. Okay, you know, the classic litmus test would be if your father asks for a drink of water and your father-in-law asks for a drink of water, you should get a drink for your father first and then your father-in-law, right? Is there an obligation to do so? It's certainly not d'oraisa. I mean, to honor an in-law. It's certainly not d'oraisa. Maybe it's d'rabbanan. It's not on the same level as Kibbutz Ava'im. But a Talmud of mine pointed this out once. We were learning this sugya. I forgot how it came up. But if you look at the Midrashim in Parshas Yisro, when Yisro shows up, Moshe Rabbeinu is, you know, serving on hand and feet. He's the waiter at this meal where Yisro comes to visit. And the lesson of the Mishnah, that's one of the places where we derive the notion of giving respect to an in-law, to a father-in-law and mother-in-law. It doesn't say Chayav Adam Bechvod Chamav, like it would say Chayav Adam Bechvod Aviv. It says L'olam Yehi Muchan Adam L'chabed Chamav V'chamoso. A person should always be prepared to honor his. Right, so what does that mean? Why that difference in Lashon? So my Talmud said, I'm embellishing a little bit, but for the moment you get married and you're thinking 24/7 about what a wonderful person that you're married to and how much appreciation you have to your wife, then by natural extension, you have to have an appreciation for the people who brought her into this world, who made her who she is, right? So lo mei muchan means that the mindset that a person has to have, you know, ultimately it'll be good for shalom bias, you know, all around, but it's more than just, well, all right, I robotically have to, my parents asked for a drink of water, I have to bring a drink of water. No, it's a whole philosophy. The philosophy should exist for the parents also. But here there's a different, you know, a different dimension of importance taken from that perspective. Okay, let's continue. Amrav Papa, Tanav Avar Abasi. We learned in Avar Abasi. Avar Abasi is Masechta Smachos. Okay, there's the whole Masechta about the laws of Avelos that didn't make it into Shas, but every once in a while we quote a Brisa. You know, the very it's full of things that are practical halacha. An ovel sitting shiva should not hold a child, a baby, because it makes him, you know, act in a certain way. He's going to joke around. He's going to talk to the baby. You know, he's going to, right. So it's interesting. There's two points made in the Gemara. Mevi'ol lidei schok. Okay, we could identify that in its own right as problematic. The ovel's not supposed to be besimcha. So, you know, give him a baby. Well, he's going to be all happy. And number two, Nintzav Eskanal Brios. Everyone who's sitting around in the Shiva house, you know, I'm not sure this is always a reaction, but what people should be thinking, Gemara says, is, you know, it's really, it's not appropriate. You know, sometimes you go to a Shiva house and there's a lot of joking around. So our reaction should be, that's not really the mood. The mood in the Shiva house should be solemn. And we have to make sure that we don't do things that break that mood.
I agree that sometimes there's a lot of joking around, but I think in a situation where somebody is sitting ship for a parent, mm-hmm. and a grandchild or somebody very young, you know, some people understand also that sometimes the person who's grieving needs to have a little to feel
sure,
better.
Sure.
And having his grandchild or a little child with him makes him feel better. And even a very young child seeing a father or grandfather who is grieving like that, they may feel they need to be with them because it affects them too.
Interesting point. So the Gemara does say in Ksuvos that you know, the reason wine was created was for Avelim, which means the Gemara recognizes that an uncle needs an outlet also. You know, he also needs to lighten up a little bit. And sometimes you go to a Shiva house and the laughter is coming more because, you know, the brothers and sisters are talking about old stories, funny things that happened. And that's part of that. That could be part of the way that you honor the memory of whoever it is. But the Gemara is apparently, you know, drawing the line at some point. That, you know, if you have a baby and you start, you know, it's a beautiful thing. You have a grandchild, you know, and you have a young baby. You totally refocus your mood. It's something which is transformative that almost takes you out of the moment. You know, an outlet is one thing. But if it's going to be something which is so distracting and could be distracting for the other people around you also, right? So then we have to draw the line.
So how much of a line is this? Is this more of a general approach, what you should do? Or is this an absolute?
Is this a broken line or a solid line?
Okay, so
with Havelis,
good point.
Some things are obviously black and white. But with Havelis, my understanding was a lot of this stuff does have
some of it. So let me read to you from the Rambam. The Rambam quotes this halacha as follows: "He says Minayin Sha Avel Asur B'Shel Sham." Interesting. He begins the halacha talking about something seems irrelevant. Minayin Sha Avel Asur B'Shel Sham. An avel is not supposed to be greeting people. You know, someone walks in, oh, shalom aleichem, you know, and and vice versa. You know, you're not supposed to be greeting the Avel. By the way, we were talking about this. An Avel is ideally supposed to wait till after Shiva to recite Kiddush Levana, provided that the time is not going to expire. But because built into the Kiddush Levana, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. So even though that's not like a warm, hearty greeting, you know, nowadays, you know, even a Shalom Aleichem is almost a routine, you know, it's just like another salutation. But there's something to be said. Shenemar Hanegdom, there's a pasuk in the Cheskel that the Avel is supposed to exercise a degree of silence, right? We learned from Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen, by Yidom Aaron, he suffered the ultimate loss in front of his own eyes, and he was quiet. So that's not just a response of, I had no question of God's decisions, but it's also the mood of an Avel is supposed to be, we'll say, reflective and introspective, maybe not 24-7. It could be he'll go crazy if he's 24-7 just sitting, you know, in the corner to himself. But it means, as the Rambam continues, even curtailing things like greetings is part of that halacha. And towards the end of the halacha, he says, "Im b'sheila shalom nesar ba'avel." If we prohibit an avel to exchange those hearty greetings, kal v'chomer shu asur laharpus dvarim uschok shenamar dom. So certainly, too much talking, too much schok. Schok is joking around, so that has to be limited. And then the examples: lo yechos tinok biyado shelo yivienu lide schok. You shouldn't hold a baby in your hand because that's what's going to happen, right? We know that this is not on the books. You know, when you talk about, you know, a little bit of flexibility, it's not on the books. But Minhag Yisrael is not to listen to music, certainly not during Shiva, right? Certainly not during Shiva because that picks up your mood. So you don't have to dafka listen to da 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 da, you know. But you shouldn't listen to something that's going to make you happy. You know, you have to draw the line somewhere. You're not allowed to go into a place where there's a celebration, where there's a wedding. Okay, we have some rare exceptions, like a wedding, you know, of a child or something like that. But there, a major function of that heter is for the sake of the Baal Simcha, right? It's an interesting exception that stems from, well, my child, they don't have their parent at the wedding, right? It's not so much coming from the other direction. Well, how can I miss my kid's wedding? No, that's not a good excuse. Right, right.
Does anybody make a distinction between the mourning for a 98-year-old person who has severe illness versus a 20-year-old who dies in a car crash?
It's a great point. As far as I know, no. Because, and getting back to what we were discussing earlier, regardless of what you're feeling inside, there's always a perception of the other people. And just because, I'm not pointing to you, but I'm saying, if just because Reuven, you know, thank God, his mother had a wonderful life. She was 103, and you know, and she passed away peacefully, you know, so no one was taking it too hard. But you can have another person in the room who was devastated, and it didn't matter that his mother was also 103, but it was his mother, you know. So if there's subjectivity, you know, if we don't have a sort of a baseline of what the appropriate behavior is, then it'll be misunderstood, right? Like we spoke about Rav Schechter, right? Rav Schechter insisted on not going to the weddings, even though his father was mochel and said you can go to the weddings because everyone else would perceive it as being callous and acting inappropriate. That's one answer. The other answer is also because some of this is, because it is mandated, so it's not only about the mood. It means that we legislate what Kibbutz Avim is, right? Some of you may have heard a recent hesped that took place in the community where the father insisted on his children calling him by the first name. Insisted on that. Okay, now for other people that sounds crazy, right? But that was how the person wanted to be called. Okay, so you know, but we do have, when it comes to keep it out of aim over here of Avelos, there's certain objective rules that we say this is what it takes to honor a person, even if you haven't quite felt it inside, you are called upon to act in a certain way to reflect on your loss, because maybe you're missing something. Maybe, she's 103, but maybe you're not thinking enough about the gravity of a loss if you're totally fine with it, so to speak. Right? Meaning, it's like davening. I don't want to one more second. You know, people often wonder why we have six or seven brachas in the Lashon Esrei three times a day. They're all in some theme which seems very disconnected from my day-to-day life. So the answer is, well, it's supposed to be connected to your day-to-day life. Tefillah is meant to refocus us on what we don't think about every single day. And the same thing is true when it comes to,
Regarding the whether you greet somebody mm-hmm. at a shiva house. I was always told that at a shiva house you don't greet anybody, not another visitor.
It's correct. It's correct.
Not even not
that's
just
correct.
The over, but
correct.
Or a man, member of the family, but another.
Right.
Your friend who is also
100%, 100%. A base oval has certain rules
yeah.
that apply to everybody. So you know, if you see someone and it happens, you know, you see someone you haven't seen in 20 years, so you should give them a little, you know, a little salute, a little wave, something like that. But it's like Tisha B'Av. The Shiva house is like Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, we're also not supposed to, you know, give someone a pat on the back.
And
you know.
Part of that rule was when the way I was told, at least, is that you don't introduce anybody. You don't know my friend Fred.
I'm not sure I would agree to that, because I think sometimes if you know, it's happened to me. I showed up at a shiva house and I had to introduce myself. And if I would have gone and left and no one knew that the rabbi was there, right? You know, so either they'd be like, oh, how come the rabbi didn't show up, you know? But when you find out who that person is, wow, you made the effort to come, even though we weren't so close, even though you just happened to know my mother's, you know, great aunt's sister-in-law. That's very meaningful for people, and if you don't identify yourself, then you don't really get that that sense of, you know, what the person did in making the effort to come. Let's just finish one more minute. Let's go a little bit further. Attitude. That's Ein Mavern Al Mitos Sekufos. A quote from the Mishnah. Taner Rabbanan Holech LeBeisa Avel. If you go to a Beisa Avel, Im Hayalibo Gaspo Yavruhu Al Mitos Kfuyos. If the visitor is someone who is Libo Gaspo, very good friends. So then you should join the Avel, Yavruhu. Yavruhu is talking about the Sudas Havra, the first meal that's provided by the community right after the cemetery. So Yavruhu Amitos Kfuyos, right? The old practice was they used to turn the beds upside down. They wouldn't sleep on a bed the whole week. Nowadays we don't do that for various reasons. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. But they would turn the beds upside down. Sometimes they would sit on the upside down bed. And so a close friend of the Avel would actually join the Avel on the floor and eat the meal together with him. Vim la, but you're not such a good friend. Yavru amitos zukufos. So then, either that means the not so close friend is allowed to sit on a higher level, and the avel sits on the floor. But some say the avel is allowed to join him on a higher level in order to give respect to the person who came to visit him, which is an interesting chiddush. Rava Isra Be Milsa, Rava once had, and unfortunately it didn't happen to him, which is a euphemism for saying that he lost a relative. Ola Gabi Abba Bar Marta. Abba Bar Marta came to visit him. To who Abba Bar Miumi, this is the person who also went by the name sometimes Abba Bar Miumi. Rava Zakif. Rava lifted up a bed for him to sit on. Abba Bar Marta Kofi. And Abba Bar Marta turns it over again. Amar Kama Lesbe Daita Lai Tzum Rabbanon. And Rava was upset. Rava said, what a fool. Right? He should have left it where it was instead of switching what I had done. Just 30 seconds. Whenever you see in Gemara, you know, Gemara's like this, where they're insulting each other, calling each other names. Like, what do you do with that? So you know who answers this question? None other than the Chafetz Chaim in a Sefer on Lashon Hara. He says, well, what am I supposed to do? So he quotes a Maharik, you know, 800 years ago, already addressed this question. He said, Rava was from the generation prior to Abba Bar Marta. It was common for the Rebbeim to educate their Talmidim, encourage their Talmidim with a little bit of tough love and say, oh, you're such a genius. There's no way you could have possibly said something like that and you're still awake, right? Not as an insult, but as a way to encourage them by saying, I think so highly of you that it can't be that you something like that came out of your mouth unless you were drunk, you know? But so that's the idea when you see Gemara like this. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos.